Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the Yummy Wisdom Healing Happy Hour. This is your host, Maggie Spielpenning, with At Ease Holistic Coaching. Yummy Wisdom are those lovely serendipitous events that just open up new points of view and new worlds and new ways we can play out in the world. You'll have to bear with me today, audience. I'm listening to my voice and it doesn't sound like my voice. So I notice that's distracting me a little, and we'll just be with that. So today we are going to be looking at what if it isn't personal? And this is on the heels of our topic last week, where we talked about what do healers provide. And that also on the heels of there can be no healing unless you have the will to heal. That's tantamount. That's the most important thing. And so the spaces that healers provide, and healers can be family, friends, anybody that provides a space that allows you to facilitate your own healing. So things like humor honors that were above what happened. Humor makes us laugh, the laugh of recognition. Lessons of karma honors a person's strength, that they're bigger than their injury. Illumination honors a person's desire for understanding and achieving wisdom. And there's more, but that gives you a background. You can listen to last week's topic if you'd like a more richer understanding. So this actually dovetails very nicely into what if it isn't personal. So if we facilitate our own healing, and if what is needed is for the spaces of honor to be revealed and restored, where does personal get in the way? Often, when we're wounded by someone, whether it's being dishonored or disrespected or getting our feelings hurt, there's the betrayal of how could they do that to me? Often you see this with friends, like they've been friends for years and then somebody does something, and that something is a deal breaker for the person it was done to. And they're like, how could they do that to me? I thought she was my friend. How could that happen? What we want to tease out, often that's just the way that person behaves. That thing they did to you that personally hurt you so bad, they do that to everybody. And in their worldview, in their point of view, that doesn't show up as a behavior that wounds. I don't think people choose wounding behavior. Actually, I can think of one or two current exceptions to that rule, but I think everybody in the States knows who they are. So let's see. Let's keep on topic here. Making our wounds personal also keeps the wound stuck. Let me say that again. That keeping wounds personal keeps the hurt stuck. It's like the focus becomes on the wound and the devastation of the wound rather than this thing happened and I want to make sure this thing never happens again. But like having a conversation about it like adults would. And that said, I know there are people who have been in situations with unhealthy people, and you can't reason with or make requests from unhealthy people. These are conversations for healthy people also dealing with healthy people. But there are things that we take very personally, things like your partner snoring, or the neighbor's baby or their dog barking or crying at 3 a.m. every single night. And those are the kinds of things where, like, gosh, you know, like, the spouses, we often think they're snoring just to annoy us. There's not much power in being, you know, stuck in the annoyance. There is power in, you know what, hun, I'm not sleeping. We got to do something. You know, here, try these strips, or here, let's, you know, not eat dairy right before going to bed, or what have you. Let's see. I am going to check to see. I think we have a caller, and I'll check. And if the caller would like to speak, I'll let that person speak. And if you'd rather wait, just say, I'll wait, and I'll keep moving on. Okay, I'm not hearing anything, so I'm going to continue. Okay, good. I just checked to make sure my mic wasn't muted. I had that help. Okay, thank you. Thank you, caller. So I'm going to share a few examples that I picked up from people who noticed where they got tripped up by things they were taking personally. So I had a friend who often is in meetings at work, and she'll put out an idea, and someone will challenge it, and often he used to react emotionally rather than logically. Like, he would hear the question and hear it as a challenge or a judgment of his ideas being sketchy. But when he thinks on principles, like, what's the meeting about? What's the goal we're trying to achieve? What's the result we're trying to produce? Someone asking a question is an opening to gain more clarity. And often I think we get, you know, if someone asks a question and your reaction is to get your heckles up, chances are there's a wound or a defensiveness. That just even distinguishing that is worth exploring. What is it about that that's got me on guard, feeling like I'm in danger? Let's see. I talked to other people. Like, I have another friend that it just annoys her so much when she sets up appointments with people and they're either late or they blow her off. And that happening a few times, you know, you allow for one or two emergencies. At least that's the way I was raised. But if it keeps happening, then it really, you know, you might personally be upset about it, but there's no power for you in being personally upset other than noticing the upset and being willing to do something about it. Let's see. Okay, I should say that a lot. I actually noticed the more I explored, you know, where is it personal, where is it not personal, I noticed that most of my wounds, most of the things that I get upset about, it's like they're personally upsetting to me. And the more I looked, the more I explored, I actually found very little in my life that the upset wasn't personal. And I, you know, it was really depressing for a few minutes until I looked and saw that, well, if it's, you know, if I'm the one taking it personal, that also means that I'm the one who can do something about the upset. And looking at an upset through the intention of something needs to change here and I'm going to do something about it is very different than wallowing in the upset and the futility of the upset and the how could this happen to me of the upset and the hurt and the anguish and the stuckness of the upset. Stuckness is not fun. I think we've all been there, so I'm not trying to say you'll never be stuck or you shouldn't ever be stuck. But being stuck is often an indication of you not being able to see where you have some power. Even if it's just saying, I'm stuck, that's very powerful. Being with what's so, seeing what is. Let's see if there's anything else. Callers, I would love it if there's anything I can clarify for you or anything that makes sense or doesn't make sense. I'd love this to be worth your time.
Well, there are times where I get stuck in the upset and take it personal, and I'm getting better at it, saying it's not about me and like what's going on in their life. And there are times where in the past I've been upset with someone and I call and I say, well, I hope you haven't had an emergency, and the whole time fuming, like, why did they stand me up? And because of having an abuse background where I've been abused a lot, where people didn't, you know, treat me with value and respect, that's still a little bit of a carryover. It used to be a lot carryover. Now I'm getting better at it. And I just have to look at it. What about me?
Yes. Well, I'm so sorry. No, continue.
What you had said about if it was continuing, when I've had it on a continual basis, I just let the person know, leave a message and say, ball's in your court. You want to talk to me, you know where I am. And I just stop calling.
Yes. Yes. So there's a couple things I'd like to say right out of the gate. First of all, I'm sorry for all the things you had to endure as a child that have contributed to the adult you are now. I'm sorry for all the scary and all the mean. You didn't deserve it. And what happens is every single human being creates strategies that allow them to survive their childhood. And a child who's been raised in a loving, kind, caring, nurturing environment grows up with different sets of values and standards of behavior and different indicators for what is safe and what is not safe than a person who was raised with the constant threat of beatings or abuse or sexual abuse. And even verbal abuse can be horrific. But those kinds of repeated patterns cause very different strategies for survival and very different strategies for distinguishing what is safe and what is not safe, what is dangerous and what is not dangerous. And I think sometimes it is more of a challenge for people who've lived beyond abuse just because that, the self-awareness, the awareness of others, that hypervigilance, let me complete this thought a little differently, that sometimes we hold on to the bad as a reminder so that the bad won't happen again. Abuse survivors have an awareness in the physicality and body language of other people. So they've had to have that awareness of, is this person angry or not angry? Is this person safe or unsafe? So that holding on to those kind of wounds so they won't happen again is a logical thing for a person to do, and it makes a lot of sense. And I'm trying to see, and thank you, caller, for this, if there's a way to pull apart the making it personal so that there's room for more peace and more open behavior. And caller, I'd love it if you could give me an indication of what's working and what you need more of with what I've said so far.
This is for the general audience who's been abused. What happens is we are so used to reacting like a child would. We have not grown up to an adult maturity level. We still are aggressive like a child instead of learning adult assertiveness. And that's the changeover. Instead of, you know, we know that we're not going to get into that again, but we also, our maturity retards at the age of what we're abused in different areas. So it's not the fault of the victim. But with therapy, they can work through that and they can start becoming assertive and learning how to better protect themselves and take care of themselves in a more positive manner. And instead of yelling and screaming like they had in the past as a child, they can learn how to speak firmly and softly, because power is quiet. Power isn't yelling and screaming. Power is quiet.
Yes. And to ride on the heels of that, yelling and screaming was what kept that little three-year-old safe. So with you saying that we get stuck where the wounds are and we stop developing, that child coming up with yelling and screaming, that worked for however many years it worked and allowed that child to survive. And we tend to not review our strategies once we put them in place. They become automatic. And it can be something as innocuous as which hand do you brush your teeth with. At some point you chose, you know, or do you shampoo your hair first or scrub your body first when you bathe? Like there's all kinds of just ways we put, like even that as a strategy, put those in place, we survive. So again, a child who's been abused will come up with a strategy like yelling and screaming that allows them to escape their attacker. Whereas a little, you know, little sweet, raised, nonviolent child would not have to come up with a strategy of kicking and screaming. They're, you know, very different world for both of those children. And I agree with you, caller, that however you address healing from those wounds, whether you go for counseling or therapy or however you work through the wounds, every time you work through an old strategy, get to the source of that originating strategy and honor it and appreciate it and integrate it, forgive it, thank it, all of that, there's then room to create something new. And it takes the consciousness and the awareness and that will to put something new in place. Like as a, for instance, I'll use myself. I grew up with my sisters and my dad and my mom. So my dad was the only male. And occasionally my uncle was the other only male. And both my dad and my uncle were loud and volatile. And my uncle was just loud. I actually, it took me till I was a teenager to see that loud did not necessarily mean volatile. But as a little girl, that's what I saw, so I just lumped those two things together. And it took me years and years and several different transformational programs up to and including Alison Armstrong's work for me to start seeing sheepdogs. And let me say what I mean by that. So Alison has this really just delicious saying that even sheepdogs look like wolves if all you can see is teeth. What she means by that is for people who've been in abusive situations, for people who've been around dangerous men and therefore have put up and built strategies that allow them to be safe from these predators, doing her work allowed me to pull that apart and start seeing men who were safe and men who were heroes and men who were sheepdogs and not wolves. And that is juicy. That I wasn't sure as a child if I would ever get to a place where I looked at men as the yummiest people on the planet. That's miraculous. That's huge. You know, it actually, the assumption, because my, like I say, my dad was loud and volatile, and there was this, you know, okay, what's it going to take? When is the axe going to fall? And I just assumed that all men were like that. So every job I had, all through school, I was just waiting for what's the thing that I say that's going to have this person lose it and haul off and hit me. Yeah, that's crazy. That's a crazy way to go through life thinking that about half the population. It was exhausting. It was scary. And it's lovely, beyond belief, thank you, Alison Armstrong, to be on the other side of that. And it's not just trusting who men are. It's also trusting who I am, honoring who I am. Caller, was that useful?
Yes, it is. And I've heard that before. And now when sometimes when I'm around men, it's like, are they wolves? Are they predators? Are they sheepdogs? And I have to watch and wait. And then at other times, if I'm just completely uncomfortable, I'll go somewhere else. And I won't look at the situation and who they are. I just won't talk to them.
Yes. I would trust the discomfort. You know, we who have been in situations that were unsafe do sort of have this uncanny radar. So, first of all, I applaud you that you can step back long enough to go, is this a wolf or is this a sheepdog? And taking the time as well to tune into your own truth and your own awareness to see, you know, okay, is this situation safe? Do I feel safe here? And I don't feel safe is a valid conclusion to come to. And good for you for honoring yourself. And there, you know, there may be ways to look at, you know, what would it take to feel safe here? You know, is there someone I can talk to? Is there a request I can make? Of course, that would vary from person to person and situation to situation. But I really want to acknowledge the work that you've done in just having the awareness to ask the question, is a wolf or a sheepdog?
Thank you.
No, thank you. This is excellent. So, as I said, for me, at any rate, noticing how personal all my upsets were was very liberating for me. And equally, assuming that it wasn't personal on the part of the person who hurt me or who I was hurt by. You know, the looking through the filter of what if they just treat everybody this way? Like I say, that's all. Okay. From there, you know, it's the behavior that I find fault with and the behavior I can address rather than taking things personal and assume that that person is personally doing this on purpose, personally, then all I can see is the fault and the upset. I can't see, like, oh, there's, you know, there's this thing that they're doing, I don't want them to do that. And how can I make the request that they not do that? Or there's this thing that this person isn't doing, and I need them to do it. You know, like, it's my anniversary tomorrow. I want flowers. Guess who I'm going to have to tell that I want flowers?
Happy anniversary.
Why, thank you. Well, thank you ever so, ever so. And, caller, do you have any questions or comments? We're coming up on the end of our time together. I want to make sure you're fully taken care of.
I'm fully taken care of, and I'm going to need to hang up because I have to leave soon. But thank you.
Okay. Well, thank you. Thank you so much for joining us. I really appreciate it. It's always better when we have callers. So, much appreciation.
You're
and
welcome.
And on that note, on that note, I'm just going to wind this up and put it out to you that personal or taking things personal is a two-edged sword. If by taking it personal it gives you an access into looking at what do I personally want to be different, go for it. Assuming that the other person is personally doing this to you, there's just more stuck there. The real juice is that's just the way they are. And just the way they are, there's room for negotiation. There's room for requesting. You know, I need you to not take food off my plate. Kind of creeps me out. My God, you got lots of brothers and sisters and that's how you eat. You don't get to do that with me. Thank you. So that's it for today. Tune in next week, same bat time, same bat channel. And we'll do this again. Bye-bye.